Judy was boring.
Hello.
Then Judy discovered Chumbacasino.com.
It's my little escape.
Now Judy's the life of the party.
Oh, baby, mama's bringing home the bacon.
Whoa, take it easy, Judy. The Chumba life is for everybody. So go to Chumbacasino.com and play over 100 casino-style games. Join today and play for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Chumbacasino.com. No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Lucky Land Casino, asking people, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
Lucky? In line at the deli, I guess?
Aha, in my dentist's office. More than once, actually.
Do I have to say?
Yes, you do.
In the car, before my kids' PTA meeting.
Really?
Yes.
Excuse me, what's the weirdest place you've gotten lucky?
I never win and tell.
Well, there you have it. You can get lucky anywhere, playing at LuckyLandSlots.com. Play for free right now. Are you feeling lucky? No purchase necessary. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply. See website for details.
Welcome to Terrible People Doing Terrible Things. I'm Amanda, and I'm a licensed psychologist who enjoys studying the worst of humanity.
And I'm Laura, a psychology and horror addict who really likes to research dark and twisted things and talk about them.
So today, I'm going to talk to you about Mother Teresa.
Nice. Okay. I thought she was a saint.
She is. She is a saint, but she has not always demonstrated what I would consider saint-like behavior.
This is interesting.
You know, I was doing the research and looking through her life, her background, and how she grew up in a very religious household. Both of her parents were Catholic, and her father was a very devout Catholic. And it made me kind of start to reflect on my own history of growing up in, it wasn't like a super religious household, but it was a household where I was encouraged or bribed to go to church on Sunday morning.
Which is a common practice.
Yeah.
It's a very common practice. Obviously, kids don't want to go and sit in church and listen to somebody talk. You know, it's just not a kid activity.
It's not very kid friendly, especially the worship services. I'm sure some of the Sunday school maybe was a little better, but I had like interesting experiences in church. So we would either go to, like, I'd go with my parents to the church we were going to, and it was a Baptist church at first, or we'd go to my grandmother's church.
Now, which state is this in?
This is Tennessee.
Tennessee.
Okay. So Bible Belt. And my grandmother's church was this little country church over, well, the name of the town is literally Cottontown. Cottontown, Tennessee is where my grandparents.
Cottontown, Tennessee.
Yes.
All right.
And there was a church, and that may not have been in Cottontown, but it was pretty close to that area. And it was a missionary Baptist church. So we sang the hymnal.
We're both very familiar with the the Baptist church.
The good thing about my grandmother's church was most Sundays they'd also have a potluck afterwards.
Ooh.
So I at least got to look forward to that petri dish. Dish of delicious, delicious treats. And that would be kind of my grandmother's church.
Okay.
So I kind of looked forward to that, even though it was this very like hellfire and brimstone sometimes.
Was it the kind of church where they tell you like over and over again that you're a sinner?
It wasn't to the point where I necessarily left feeling bad. So it's interesting. So that was the Southern, you know, the missionary Baptist church.
Right.
And they talked about being a sinner. But for whatever reason, I never left feeling guilty.
Okay.
But like my parents' church, when we were going to just a more standard kind of Baptist church, I remember that tone of like, oh my God, I'm going to hell. You know, I thought about taking that kid's bike or something. Yeah, I'm going to go to hell.
Right.
Evil. Like, evil incarnate.
You had one bad thought and you're just the worst sinner that the world has ever seen.
That was always fun.
Okay, well, I have a quick church story for you. We'll leave out names and places, but so my experience is sort of different from yours. I did not grow up in a religious household, but I did have a lot of friends here who, you know, wanted me to go to church with them and things like that. And I would, because I, you know, I didn't really know anything about it. My parents didn't, you know, they weren't like that. But I also got guilted into going to a Baptist church.
What is the guilt with Baptist church?
I don't know, man. It's a lot of guilt. Basically, I wasn't allowed to see the guy that I was dating unless it was during Sunday school. And they also had Wednesday school.
Yes.
So that was the only time I was allowed to see him, because his mom didn't like me because I was a sinner and it wasn't religious. And so we would go to the little, you know, the little room thing. They had like a separate building for Sunday school. And one day we went in and the walls in the room. Now, keep in mind, I am a non-religious person going into this. You know, I'm not religious, but I'm trying to be there.
Yeah.
You know, it's something that he does. So. And I get to see him. So I walk in and there are black trash bags taped to all of the walls.
What?
The whole room is covered in black trash bags. Okay. And there is things painted on it in red paint. And those things are machine guns, grenades, things like that. And it looks like it's painted in blood because it's painted in red. Okay. So I walk into this and I've always had like a nervousness about, you know, religion and things like that, just because growing up in the Bible Belt, non-religious. So we sit down and the guy starts talking and I'm sitting next to my boyfriend and I'm like, oh God. And he says, we are at war with the non-believers. And I am a non-believer sitting in, I felt like a military insurgent or something.
It
like
sounds
into
like
the
a militia group. Like you walked into some kind of fascist militia.
Right.
Cult.
And I'm like 17, dude. I was so nervous. I didn't know what to do. I just sat there and I was like, oh shit. I was like, and then yeah, I just, it was awful. So I'm not a huge fan of organized religion. You know, people can believe what they want to believe. I think everybody should just, you know, you believe what you want to believe and I'll believe what I want to believe.
Well, yeah,
and let's leave each other alone
about
it.
Live your life, do the best you can, and everybody leave each other the hell alone for the most part.
Exactly. So why don't you tell me about Mother Teresa and the interesting facts about her?
Heck yeah. So Mother Teresa, and I think I'm going to, we'll see if this works. I think I'm going to start calling her Mama T.
Mama T.
Mama T.
I like it.
So Mama T was also known as Saint Teresa of Calcutta. And of course, she's best known for her work with the Missionaries of Charity. So this group provided care and housing to the poor, specifically in India, but they end up growing.
Okay.
So she was she's Albanian, and she was born in Skopje, North Macedonia, the Balkan Peninsula. So she was already in Southeastern Europe, and she ended up going to India, I think, as part of her later work when she joined a convent. I think that was part of kind of how she connected, and she saw the suffering. She saw the fact that there were kids in the street begging for food, and she wanted to help. So, you know, started out really good intentions. So she was born Agnes Gonya Teresa Bojaxiu in 1910 in Skopje. And again, this is on the Balkan Peninsula, Southeast Europe. Think about like Serbia, Bulgaria, Bosnia, that area.
Okay.
And I'm not a geography buff, so that's kind of the extent of how well I can describe what the heck that's about. So she worked with the poor, but she actually grew up pretty financially comfortable. Her father was relatively successful as an Albanian merchant. And like I had kind of said at the beginning, her father, he was Nicola, and mother, Drainophile. I have no idea how to pronounce that. They were devout Catholics, and they were very involved in the church and in city politics.
Okay.
And her dad did pass away when she was pretty young. He passed away when she was about 8 years old in 1919. And so as a result of this, she became pretty close to her mom, which makes sense.
Yeah, of
and
course.
I think this is where her interest in charitable work probably started here, because her mother would invite poor members of the community to come and actually sit and eat dinner with them.
Oh, okay. That's nice. I can't imagine that in present day.
No.
Like just inviting a bunch of people over to your house. It's just such a different time.
I've gotten very skeptical and fearful. Any person I don't know could kill me. It's kind of the way I live
exactly.
My life.
I kind of, everybody I don't know is a serial killer.
Yeah, and I don't.
Like, and I'm like, oh, they could abduct me. No.
I don't know if that says more about me or more about society, but.
Oh, it definitely says more about us.
It is where it is. So this is where Mama T got these ideas and learned about, you know, I need to treat everyone as though they're my neighbor. I need to do good things and make sure to take care of other people in the community.
Right.
And then.
Which is like the good part of religion.
Well, yeah,
you know?
It can be good in the sense of what it teaches about taking care of other people, community, looking out for each other.
Working together. Yeah, definitely.
And so she joined a primary school, or didn't join. She was educated in a primary school, and this was run by a local convent. And at the age of 12, while they were on a religious pilgrimage, which was something they took often, she experienced.
It sounds awful.
I don't know why I'm imagining, like, anytime I hear the word pilgrimage, I imagine people walking for, like, hours, walking miles.
And carrying heavy things.
Like, almost like they're hiking.
Dragging. Very depressing.
And they don't have water for some reason.
Sad hiking. Really, really sad hiking. That's what pilgrimage is.
That's what it sounds like. And this was when she experienced her first religious calling.
Okay.
So she, you know, she's already in a convent, which is interesting, but I think she experienced this calling of, like, I have to do more.
That's when it, like, really hit her.
I have to do more. This is going to be the rest of my life. I'm not just going to get educated here, but this is what I'm going to do. So at 12.
I mean, so far, you know, good lady.
Well, yeah, but it's interesting that at 12 years old, she's already...
Well, remember they used to get married and stuff at 12 back then, too. 12 was very different which is disgusting.
Back in the Middle Ages.
That's the way it was.
And then by 18, she joined this convent in Dublin, Ireland, the Sisters of Laredo. And she adopted the name Sister Mary Teresa after Saint Teresa of Lisieux. So she adopted the name Sister Mary, and then it was during her work with the Sisters of Laredo that she was sent to Calcutta, India. And she was going to teach geography and religious studies at St. Mary's High School for Girls.
Okay.
So this is where I think she really realized and started to observe all the suffering that was happening.
Which was prominent back then. Things were not easy.
Times were hard. And India still had pockets of not being this very developed country. And so access to food, medicine, shelter.
Yeah.
There were a lot of poor neighborhoods and poor communities.
Right.
So she worked at St. Mary's High School for about 15 years. And she experienced another religious calling to begin a mission dedicated to providing compassion and love to the poorest of the poor.
Okay. All sounds pretty stand up
so far. Yeah, so far so good. So in 1946, after hearing this calling, she parted with the sisters to form her own order. And this is where we get the Missionaries of Charity. This is when it is first started.
Okay.
The Missionaries of Charity, you can think of it as like a congregation of Roman Catholic women who come together and feel like it's their calling to serve the poor. And a lot of what they did was provide homes for orphans, hospices for the terminally ill, and nursing homes. Okay. So these little like nursing homes for lepers as well. So they took in the outcasts.
Yeah, the ones that society wouldn't accept. Because a lot of times people who had leprosy or mental illness or things like that were subjected to really, really terrible conditions.
Yeah, it was like we didn't...
And we're just kind of like put to the side.
Other people didn't want to touch them, didn't want to see them, didn't want to catch whatever they have. So I think that, again, they were reaching out to the people that were ostracized and were pretty much abandoned by everybody else.
And needed help.
Exactly. And so by 1997... And this is well beyond Mother Teresa's death. The Missionaries of Charity had grown to include more than 4,000 nuns. And it was spanning, by 1997, it spanned over 130 countries. Because it's been very active.
That's massive. Yeah, that's massive.
It has remained active even with its founder's death.
Wow. That's a wide-reaching charity.
And so Mother Teresa did become a saint. She was declared a saint by the Catholic Church in 2016. And so you might, again, also hear her called Saint Teresa of Calcutta.
Right.
While this work is what Mother Teresa is known for and what she's famous for and why people use that, the term like...
Well, they use her name as like a, you're a good person.
Exactly.
It's a symbol of charity, and everybody knows her as, you know, this wonderful lady who helped people.
Yeah,
in
we've
life.
Equated...
And who is a saint
We've
now.
Equated it with being this godly...
Great person.
Just
no faults.
Exactly. You're pretty much just this pure virtuous person.
Right.
But
which means you can get away with a lot of stuff.
Exactly. And that and that we don't talk about those things either. So there have been allegations
of course
surround her beliefs, the practices that were things that were happening in these missions that a lot of people aren't aware of.
Okay.
One of the things that popped out to me at first was the finances.
Well, I mean, when you're spanning across 130 countries, you know, you have bank accounts all over the freaking
place.
Well,
it's a religious group. It's a religious organization.
And I'm sure they're nonprofit,
right? Yes, organization. So they are tax exempt. So
tax exempt and they take donations.
Any money they have coming in, they don't know taxes on it.
That would be nice.
And so while Mother Teresa, she was pictured a lot of times walking around in an Indian sari. And this is that iconic white sari with the three blue borders.
With the blue, right.
And
okay.
This is based on just basic, simple Indian clothing. And she, yep, she believed she was told by Christ himself to dress in simple Indian clothes because this would come to symbolize holiness. So she's walking around in pretty basic garb, but this didn't really reflect her net worth.
Okay. So she's putting up the image of being not materialistic, yes, and, yes, and, you know, poor or whatever, like, however you want to
like
define
poor,
it.
I'm
one of them. Yeah. But really, you have a lot of money going on behind,
yes,
the scenes.
So her net worth is believed to be in the tens of millions of dollars.
Oh, wow.
And there's a previous bookkeeper for the Missionaries of Charity who was talking about how they're just in one bank account alone in New York, one bank account, there was $50 million at one point.
And that's one bank account in one country of 130. Yes.
And who knows if they didn't have, like, you know, that's one bank account in the U.S. How many do they have in, yeah, the U.S.? How many do they have in India? How many do they have in...
And I'm sure being, like, a charity, they don't really have to, like, prove much.
I mean, if they're not... I don't know how it kind of works with the IRS and their level of oversight, but I would assume it's less for these types of charities. I could be wrong.
So they make all this money. What are they doing with it? Because if she's living like she's poor, what are they spending money on?
So, again, like, it may not be just this really scandalous thing for them to have a lot of donations.
No, I mean, you're a good charity if you're doing,
yeah,
good things. Sure, we want to give you money, and I hope you have a lot of money to build buildings for people and orphanages.
Well,
and
sure.
Whatever.
And I think, you know, people are probably donating this money, hoping it's going to go to those things. But the problem is,
of course,
it seems like the Missionaries of Charity didn't really use the money to help the people they were supposed to be helping.
Okay. So they're helping them with no resources, and they're just keeping,
yes,
the resources.
Limited resources. And from what I found out, Mother Teresa was pretty adept at getting things donated. So they would have buildings donated for their little homes.
You know, when you're that good of a charity, like,
yeah,
I mean, how do you say no to Mother,
oh,
Teresa?
Exactly. She became really good at haggling for things and talking people into giving them things because of the mission, because of what they were doing. So buildings,
right,
food, clothing, labor, it was essentially all donated or paid for and covered by outside entities.
Okay.
And Susan Shields, so this Susan Shields was a sister with the order for about 10 years. This is from her article, Mother Teresa's House of Illusions.
I like the title.
She said, Mother was very concerned that we preserve our spirit of poverty, and spending money would destroy that poverty. She seemed obsessed with using only the simplest of means for our work. Was this in the best interest of the people we were trying to help, or were we, in fact, using them as a tool to advance our own sanctity? In Haiti, to keep the spirit of poverty, the sisters reused needles until they became blunt.
Oh, yeah. God.
Seeing the pain caused by the blunt needles, some of the volunteers offered to procure more needles, but the sisters refused. So they, you know, the people, the other nuns working in the convent would notice the pain that was being caused by reusing these needles.
Well, because, I mean, like, not only the pain that's caused by reusing needles, but every freaking disease,
yes,
ever that you could spread. I mean, reusing needles is the number one cause for, like, you know, the spread of, like, hepatitis and shit like that.
Yeah.
That's really dumb. And I don't understand, if you want to help people, like, if I'm truly somewhere and I want to help them, why wouldn't I just spend this money and make these amazing buildings and healthcare places and imagine them, what you could do?
Oh, exactly.
That.
Well, and
but why aren't they?
They're just not. She had also made a comment, the Constitution forbade us to beg for more than we needed. But when it came to begging, so they were told not to beg for more than they needed. So beg for the bare minimum, ask for the bare minimum. But when it came to begging, it was almost like the millions of dollars they had in the bank were treated as though they did not exist.
I just don't understand that. I really don't. Like, I mean, I get it. You know, you actually, I don't. No, I don't get it.
Yeah.
I don't. Is that like a mental illness on her part? Is she too obsessed with this fact of poverty that she is actually hurting people? You know what I mean? I don't feel like maybe she's not doing it intentionally.
Sure. Well, and it's almost like she started to equate suffering and poverty with holiness.
Right. So she wanted to be closer to God.
Yes.
and more righteous and more...
To an extent, and I'll talk about this a little bit later. It's like, in some ways, she very much lived up to that. And I think because of that, that perpetuated a lot of the issues, a lot of the allegations around, you know, we're begging for things, we're not using this money, we maybe aren't helping the sick that much.
You could be killing them with, I mean, reusing needles, you're killing people.
Well, and talking about that, so... Something else that's pretty troubling and even worse than kind of the money situation, but tied to the money situation, is how they actually help the sick. There was an article that was published by Robin Fox, and he's a previous editor for The Lancet, which is the world-renowned medical journal. He commented on the conditions of one of Mother Teresa's homes for the sick. And kind of side note here, a lot of physicians began referring to these homes for the sick as homes for the dying because there was a 40% mortality rate.
Ouch.
So Dr. Fox uncovered a lack of proper medical care, and this included misdiagnosis and, as a result, lack of proper treatment. And there was also this journalist who visited one of the primary locations of the Missionaries of Charity, and he compared what he saw to photographs he had seen of one of Nazi Germany's concentration camps.
That's awful.
To paint a better picture and just to give you a better idea of things, it seems, again, like syringes were reused and they were just washed in warm water. No extra steps were taken to sanitize them. And
now this is in when the 19...
So this is 1950s, so 1960s.
There's medication, yes. There's antiseptics.
Well, and we know about the importance of cleanliness and sterilization. We know about the need to sterilize.
And that just didn't matter to them. Now, what's troubling to me there is that you have homes for the sick and the nuns are diagnosing them.
So
do they have doctors?
I think they did. I think they had medical people there to some extent. But I think for the most part, they were being taken care of by nuns. Non-medically trained.
See, that's just...
A nun could come in and have some medical training, but...
Well, like nursing. Sure. You know what I mean? Like, especially like during, you know, the Civil War and stuff, you had people who could bandage up and, you know, not deep medical knowledge, but at least the basis to, you know, get somebody to survive an injury. Yeah. But to just misdiagnose, I just don't, it seems crazy to me. It really does.
Well, it's negligent. You know, it's...
And how do you think you're helping people if you have a 40% mortality rate?
Yeah, so if your purpose is, again, to help people...
That's what they say.
Why wouldn't you take the steps necessary, at least within your means? And they had a lot more means than they were taken advantage of.
Well, and why are you hurting people? You know, doctors, you're a doctor. You know what I mean? Like, you have an oath.
There are ethics
involved
in this.
There's ethics involved. You can't just, you know, fuck with people. That's, you know, even in the psychology field, like, you can't mess with somebody's brain without being trained.
You're not supposed to. But
you're not supposed to. I mean, I do it sometimes, but yeah.
Well, and again, kind of like tying into some more of this, they would house contagious tuberculosis patients just with other people. So they didn't contain. Ooh. They didn't try to isolate and contain things.
That sounds like what's going on right now.
So people were understandably in immense amounts of pain with some of these illnesses and conditions.
I can only imagine the sounds of
pain. They didn't give them painkillers.
Did they have them?
They had them, and again, they had money to get them if they needed them. But
Mama T's like,
no. This was based on her belief that the most beautiful gift for a person is that he can participate in the suffering of Christ.
Now, this is a huge thing that I don't appreciate in the Bible, is suffering. So it sounds to me like she got obsessed with suffering and holiness and how God wanted her to help people, not necessarily how science or people around her wanted to help people. She had her own way, and that's how it was going to be
done. Exactly. And it was based on her belief that suffering was a literal gift from God, and it would bring people closer to
God. Is that sadomasochism? You know what I mean? Like, is she... Not her, because I guess it would be related to her, but she likes to see other people. Could you imagine walking around that sick house?
I guess there is a little bit of a sadistic or voyeuristic
side. That's sadistic, right?
Well,
if you're looking at somebody and they're like, oh God, I'm in so much pain. And you're like, good, that'll bring you closer to God. Do you know how freaking mad I would be? I don't, you're not a good person. You know what I mean? If you...
Well, and it's...
You have the means to help ease someone's pain, and you don't.
It's like we were saying, like, did she start out good? Did she have these good intentions?
I feel like she did, and she was just led in the wrong direction.
Her beliefs are what perpetuated these poor conditions.
Yeah.
I think also there's the added layer of how she believed these things to a point, and she kind of perpetuated suffering. She did not use money because money was a luxury and we need to live in poverty. And yet you hear these reports about when she got ill, she would fly to America.
Oh,
she would fly to America for medical treatment.
So you get sick and you fly yourself to America to get expensive medical treatment to fix you. Why isn't she suffering? Why doesn't she suffer through her illness? Wouldn't that bring her closer to God?
It's the logic she was using. And I mean, it's possible maybe that this was when she got really, really sick.
I mean, but if your whole thing is suffering, you don't get any medical attention, woman. You get none. Here's your dirty needle. And there's the tuberculosis patient. Go sit next to him and suffer. Yeah,
she should be embracing it, according to her beliefs.
I know. Exactly. If you're telling people, like, oh, you're in pain, suffer. It brings you closer to God. And I mean, I'm not religious, so obviously I have a very biased opinion about, like, you know. But, like, if your mission is to help people, you're not doing it. That's plain and simple. You are killing people. And you're getting away with it. Because you're a charity.
And you're getting a shit ton of money while you're doing it.
That you don't spend. Like, I would love to know what their money goes into. They've got to have a private jet or some shit.
It just sits there. No, they would get flights donated. They would get to fly for free.
So then why?
Because she's not.
I guess it's just the poverty thing. It's just. Now, does this still happen? This charity is still active.
It is still active. Now, I'm not sure if the conditions are exactly the same now because she has passed on. But
right. So maybe somebody else took over.
They are still doing some shady things.
Okay.
And I'll talk about that here in a little bit. I did want to talk about, and this isn't surprising. This isn't shocking news. Mother Teresa was pretty outspoken about her beliefs surrounding abortion. Okay.
Of course.
You know, that,
I mean,
sure,
Catholic.
Yeah. So not too surprising there. And then she's also pretty outspoken about contraception. She did not agree with contraception.
Well, women are just for making babies, Amanda. Just for making
babies.
Despite
the number of children that were orphaned in India. So she believed that contraception destroyed the power to give life and that was a selfish act.
Does not destroy the power to give life.
It puts it on pause. Puts it on hold a little bit.
It holds it for a little bit, and then when you're freaking ready, then you can try and have a baby. I will never agree with anyone who decides that they can tell a woman what to do with her body.
Well, she also did not believe in divorce. She did not support divorce, and she even wrote a letter to Ireland. So I guess they had a ban on divorce and remarriage up until 1995, which...
So we both know I'm divorced.
Yeah.
Or I have been divorced. I'm currently married again. But yet again, no names or anything. But he was from Ireland.
Oh, okay.
And he did tell me about, like, they had very, like, strict divorce laws. Because, you know, part of Ireland is Catholic, part of Ireland is Protestant. And there's still a huge conflict, and there's still... It's still a thing, but just the divorce thing, just for me, why would you suffer for the rest of your life if you're unhappy?
Because God wants it. Well, this
is the benefit of not being religious because I just divorce. Okay, cool.
Well, and I can understand, you know, people bring up the argument of the kids. If you have children.
Now that puts a whole, I don't have kids. That puts a whole nother spin on it and makes it about the kids. You have to do what's best for them.
The more we're doing research now, because I am in the field of mental health, the more research that's being done, it's showing that if the marriage needs to end, it needs to end. And that is better for the children. I mean,
unhappiness is, it's a killer.
Well,
and anyone who tells you that you should, you know, stay in an environment like that is wrong.
Yep.
You need to do what's best for you to be happy, because happiness does actually give you, you know, strength.
It does. And it's about just what the environment's going to be like. You know, if you can work stuff out, great, do it. If you can't.
Yeah, you can't. I mean, that's just it. If it's over, it's over. yeah.
You know, not surprisingly, she was against divorce, and she even wrote a letter to Ireland. Somehow, I don't know how you write a letter to a country, but she knows how. She's Mother Teresa. She can do that. Okay, and so, again, the divorce thing is not very surprising. But in more recent years, and this is what I was kind of alluding to earlier, so there's been some shady stuff happening.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
The Missionaries of Charity have also come under scrutiny related to illegal adoption practices.
Oh, yes. No.
So they...
Because they run orphanages.
They do, and they have been pretty active with adopting, you know, having people be able to adopt children from these orphanages. But in 2018, a nun,
Recent,
a nun and a social worker affiliated with a shelter for pregnant unmarried women were accused of selling babies from the home.
Oh, so we're making more money.
We are.
why are we selling babies? Why don't you just give them away? Why do you need to sell them?
No.
You're not using the money anyway.
Exactly. They're just hoarding money at this point. They were caught trying to sell a two-month-old boy for about £1,300 to a married couple.
I mean, much cheaper than legal adoption.
Yeah, the couple, of course, thought this was all legitimate, so they had no idea.
Of course, because it's a well-founded charity, you know, it's got that name behind it. You're like, okay, this is totally got to be up.
Well,
and up.
At the time that this investigation took place, there were three other incidents of selling children in illegal adoptions.
You know... And that is unfortunate because the legality of that later on in life, like if those parents, they find out they never actually legally adopted the kid, they can be taken away. You know, this is very traumatic for the child.
Well, and that's another point. There was a local child rights activist, Baidnath Kumar. So Kumar, he had visited the orphanages around 2016 and he had heard from people that there were several mothers who were asking for news of their child because they hadn't seen the child after birth.
God. So they stole children.
And they just took them away from their mothers as soon as they were born and the moms never saw them again.
Now, I know that was a common practice way back in the day when, you know, unmarried, you know, out of wedlock babies, you know, they'd send the daughter away to a convent, have the baby, the daughter comes back.
Okay, yeah.
That was an old practice, you know, because back in the day it was like a huge, like, you got pregnant and you're not married, you whore. Yeah. But today, you know what I mean? Like in the present, you've got to be kidding
me. Well, and even if the person is hoping to give the child up for adoption, I don't think you just should spirit it away to where the mother never sees it again.
Especially because, like, let's be honest, ladies, having a baby is hard. You know what I mean? And it is a whole different world of emotional attachments. You may not want the kid before you give birth. You may want him after. You know what I mean? When you see them and you know, hold them for the first time.
What,
people are very complicated with their emotions.
I hadn't thought about this, but what's the impact on that kid?
Well, it depends. I mean, are they just putting them in an orphanage? You know what I mean? What's if the orphanage is anything like their sick houses, God, maybe they should give the kids away for free. Maybe that'd be better.
Get them out of there immediately.
I can't imagine what the experience is inside those orphanages if suffering is still there.
Yeah, even with the children,
way of
potentially.
Life. Of course. Because, you know, in the Catholic religion and stuff like that, it used to be, you know, there would be purgatory if you didn't baptize your baby
immediately,
right away. And then your baby goes to hell. And I'm like, whoa. What did the baby do? The baby didn't do shit, guys.
Hold up.
But I think that changed. I think they changed the way purgatory works because, you know, you can just change it.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. We change that shit all the time.
Like, no. That's not right. That's not right. What it meant was.
Yeah. Something else I learned throughout this research was what it takes to become a saint.
Ooh,
and that's another issue. People are questioning the legitimacy of Mother Teresa's sainthood.
So what's the process here?
I'm going to kind of walk through this. So like I said, she had passed away in 1997 from congestive heart failure. And yes, she got medical treatment and she probably got a lot of pain relief in an American hospital. Mm-hmm. So there's that piece again. And it was in 2015, so almost... I can't do math, 20 years after she died, that she was canonized. She was made a saint.
So you have to be dead.
You have to be dead.
That's what
you're saying. I didn't know that.
You can't be a saint.
You can't be alive. So I found out that there are 5 steps toward achieving sainthood. And the first one, well, kind of goes without saying. This is almost like step 0. Someone's got to die.
Okay.
The person has to die.
Okay. You have to be dead.
Okay. And so let's say we're gonna use you as an example. So Laura has passed away.
Damn.
But we gotta wait 5 years after you've died.
Okay, so five is the minimum.
Step one, wait 5 years.
Gotcha. Well, die, wait 5 years.
Step zero, die. Step one, wait 5 years. Yeah. The second step is the bishop of the diocese where you live starts investigating your life. So the bishop's going to investigate your life and
that's
determine
not gonna be pretty.
If you lived a life of holiness and virtue.
I totally did.
Absolutely. No question. No question there.
I'm so virtuous, guys.
The third step is that another group is going to come in. And this is a group dedicated to investigating people for sainthood. This group is the Congregation for the Causes of the Saint.
I'm going to call them the Sainters.
The CCS. They are going to come in and they'll either accept the evidence and pass it on to the Pope, or they're going to say no. No, Laura was not virtuous. There is not enough evidence.
No, I'm totally virtuous.
So let's assume that the CCS congregation has accepted the evidence and is like, hell yeah, this girl's super virtuous.
Somebody screwed it up and is going to get fired.
Someone got paid off or something. So now the Pope has your little box.
The Pope gets to look at my life.
Box
okay.
of evidence. And he's going to decide if you lived a life of heroic virtue.
Ooh, okay.
And if that has happened, they're going to proceed toward beatification. Beatification. I don't know how to pronounce it. It's got the word beat at the front and then ification. Beatification.
Beatification.
And this is going to indicate if a miracle can be attributed to you. So you've died and you are well known somehow and people are going to start praying to you for miracles.
Okay. Send me your
if
prayers.
If a miracle has happened, according to the Pope and according to the people that are praying to you, we're going to keep going. And
there's more?
Well, there's step four. So step four is the miracles have to then be verified by evidence. And so the evidence could be, and I think a lot of times, is some kind of medical evidence that the person's disease has been cured.
Of course, because you get medication and then you attribute it to God.
I mean, it'd be kind of funny if people were praying to you for money, just like greedy money stuff, but...
That would definitely, no, what would people pray to me for? People would pray me for people to die.
So they have evidence that someone has spontaneously died after praying to you, that their enemies were blighted.
Yeah. They pray to me and they're like, light that building on fire. I'm like, okay, you got it. Miracle.
And that's your miracle. So the people verifying this evidence, because I was curious about this too. I was like, who the hell is saying...
Right. Are they just religious people? Because they're just going to agree and be like, yeah,
exactly.
Totally.
Is it just the same kind of congregation of bishops and popes? I don't know. Deacons. I think that's another term. Deacons in there. But it's actually like a combination of theologians, theologists, and scientific experts. So at least.
Well, you know, some scientific experts are religious.
Coming in
and,
there.
You know. Sure.
So this is the group they're going to try to determine if there's actual verification that this happened.
Okay.
But you got to do it twice. So someone's got to pray to you and then...
I have to light somebody on fire twice?
There have to be two miracles performed. After that, that's step five. You have been canonized and deemed a saint.
And then people,
pray
to me?
They pray to you more because now you got to keep performing these miracles.
Oh, man, that's a really busy afterlife.
You don't get to rest. You probably don't get to rest at all.
So Mama T is just in the afterlife, just freaking
bam,
working.
Bam, bam, bam. You get a miracle. You get a miracle. You get a miracle. Yeah. She's like the Oprah of sainthood.
Yeah.
So the way she was declared a saint, one of the miracles was verified by Pope John Paul II, and another miracle was verified by Pope Francis.
Okay, so two different
popes, and the miracles involved curing a man and a woman of their cancerous tumors.
Were that man and woman getting chemo treatments as well?
They were getting treatment, and this is where some of the scrutiny and the lack of support comes in. So the doctors who were treating these two people don't believe the recoveries were due to divine intervention.
Well, duh. I'm giving you medication intravenously that is going to possibly get rid of your cancer. But here's the thing that, you know, it always rolls back to is you can attribute everything to God.
Oh, yeah.
So to me, there's not really a way of like specifically prove a miracle. Maybe it is. Maybe it isn't. But that's not proof. Yes. You know what I mean? That's scientifically, that is not how proof works.
I think that people, like you said, they attribute things to like a higher power when they don't understand it, when they feel lost, when they're scared.
Right.
And it's funny to me, though, because we do the same thing sometimes when shit goes wrong.
Yeah.
We suddenly like point the finger. It mm-hmm. just takes the responsibility off of ourselves.
Yeah. It's something you can attribute to the things that you don't understand why yep. this happened. But that's the problem, is that you then can't prove yeah. that. You just can't. I mean, I'm not saying it isn't a thing. I don't believe in it. But if it is, the merging of religion and science makes it impossible to separate. Yes. So if you're giving somebody chemo and they're praying, which one
are you gonna?
The only way that you could test that would be to put a bunch of people who had cancer and just wanted to pray about it in a room.
And even that's not going to be accurate, because we don't know what the body is doing. Well, I mean, I guess we do. Somewhat. I don't know. Doctors might know. But I think that there are still some things that could happen that could be the body just doing what it's supposed to do.
I mean, your body does, you know, attack,
yeah.
you know, viruses, everything. It's not always successful.
So I don't know that there's ever a way to prove it.
Separate it. You can't.
Yeah.
Well, that was quite informative, because I did not know that Mother Teresa and her charity had so much freaking money that they don't do anything yes. with. It blows my mind, because if you had that kind of money, you could make yeah. anything. Make a free mental health facility. Yeah. That's what they need. Yeah. Why not give that to them?
Why not use that money for good?
And also, why does God want you to suffer? I don't know about you, but I don't want to yeah, suffer. No. Like, that doesn't...
I'm all good on that.
Yeah.
Yep. Ugh. So I thought about adding in these animals are assholes kind of segments.
I love all those things, like when animals attack. Yeah. It's great. Hey, it can be our thing. All right, so tell me about your asshole animal.
This seemed really relevant based on everything going on in the world with this whole pandemic situation. One mm-hmm. of the articles I found, and this was kind of this odd news section in the, I think it's United Press International.
Okay.
And the headline was, monkeys attack lab worker and steal COVID-19 blood test samples.
I'm sorry, what? They stole yes. blood samples? They mugged a yeah. lab person.
Yeah, so in the month of May, so this past May, there was a lab technician in India, and he was the victim of robbery by monkeys. He was attacked by he was attacked by a squad of monkeys, and they stole the blood samples.
I picture a bunch of monkeys. Like, I don't know what I would do. I would give them blood samples too. Monkeys are
they
scary.
And they can wield weapons. You know,
they can wield weapons. You know, chimpanzees rip people's faces off and stuff.
They're holding a bunch of sticks.
It's just not some. Yeah, it's just not something I want to fuck with. Like, no. Here, take the blood samples. Although now I feel like we're in like the zombie apocalypse. Oh, it's gonna be like God, what's the monkey movie? I'm a terrible
Planet
person.
Apes, or is there a different one?
Planet of the Apes. Yeah, no. Because, you know, they made new Planet of the Apes movies.
Oh, that's right.
And, like, I just picture, like, just monkeys with COVID bombs just throwing it at people and, like, infecting everybody with COVID.
Oh, yeah. So the tech was working at a state-run college in Meru in India, at the Meru Medical College. And he had gathered these blood samples just when he was performing the routine tests on individuals coming in with COVID symptoms. And, like you said, locals, once they heard this happened, are very concerned about not only the monkeys contracting the virus, but, you know, spreading it around. What's this going to mean for the rest of us? And there's actually, if anyone wants to check it out, there's actually footage of this one of the monkey robbers, like up in a tree, and he's chewing mm-hmm. on something. And I'm assuming it's the blood samples.
A COVID
yeah,
blood sample.
Yeah, he's chewing on some COVID. And it shows him chewing on it, spitting it out, throwing
pieces of it.
So he's going to town.
Now, correct me if I'm wrong, but this is like monkeys have spread other viruses, such as the AIDS virus.
Yes, I believe so.
I believe now. Don't quote me because I haven't done my research
on
this. On
that.
So it's not like monkeys can't contract human illnesses and spread that they can.
It seems,
you know, like we're very yes. close genetically. Yes. And that's,
you've heard about the two dogs that have contracted COVID, right? I think it's at least two. There was a dog in New York. I think it was a German Shepherd in New York.
He got
he tested positive for it. And then there was actually a dog here in Georgia. They released these.
Now, how did they know that was the dog sick?
The owners were sick and had gotten tested, and the dog started showing these neurological symptoms, and they ended up having to put him down, and they just, because of everything happening, they were like, we'll test him. You know, we'll see. And he did have COVID.
Okay, one, that's super sad.
I'm a downer. I'm Debbie Downer
and
right
two,
now.
And two, it's spreading to animals? Well, that's not okay.
Yeah, it at least has some capacity to be carried by animals.
Okay, so if I get this virus, yo, I'm just going to, like, hide in this room and have CJ leave food for me outside the door and not pet my cats.
Slot, like, in prison where they just pass things through the...
I mean, we already cut a hole in one of our doors for the cat to walk in and out of the closet.
Is that you could live out in your little...
In my shed?
Well, where's the door? Where's the cutout door? Is it leading into the sunroom? Isn't there, like, a little sunroom?
Oh, yeah. Well, that's the main bedroom. Okay. CJ's, like, computer stuff is in there. And then we have because Marvin likes to hang out with him. So
Marvin.
We have a little cut in the doorway. And now we have Jinx, too, who also, you know, likes to go wherever they want to go.
With her soft, fluffy, fluffy body.
Yep. Well, thank you guys so much for joining us. Please check out our next episode, which is going to be about the guy who you think invented the light bulb, Thomas Edison. And also check us out on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram. Tell us what you think. If there's any topics you'd like to hear about, let us know. We would love to hear feedback from you guys.
And goodbye.
Goodbye.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
If you've been hurt by a truck, you can call Colombo Law 24/7 and we'll be there to make sure you're taken care of. When someone is hurt by a truck, Colombo Law is the law firm people call to get answers. Hurt by a truck? Call Colombo Law.